A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here we are.
Welcome to the Creep Dive main episode.
I'm Cassie Delaney.
Ooh.
I'm Ooh. Jen O-D-W-Y-E-R.
I am Sophie Boystone.
We haven't done that, I'd say, in a year.
Years, like.
We are a podcast about strange and weird happenings and bad people in some cases, and also in other cases, heroes.
Yes.
Aren't we?
Yeah.
We're like lighter on the heroes, I have to say. I mean, I think we could probably name them Larry.
Oh God, that reminds me of another type of... This has to have come up with us before. And it was... When was it? God damn it. It was last week. Someone got in touch and was like, there has to be a way you guys have mentioned the balloon priest.
Oh, it's not ringing any bells.
That rarely means anything though.
Yeah, are you serious? Yeah. We haven't done it.
No. I mean, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
We're not the right people to ask.
Let me it's a quick one, right? And I'll just start us off. Okay. God love him. This happened way back. And the fact that this didn't come up at all is remarkable because it's another Larry. Lawn chair Larry.
Our king.
Father Larry.
This is Reverend Antonio Di Carli. The year was 2008.
Breaking Great news.
Year. He took off.
It wasn't really.
It was actually notably bad year.
Yeah, it was tough.
It was a tough year. Even tougher for Antonio, who was trying to do an act of great kindness with a great deal of excitement and helium. So he, one sunny April, took off from the coastal city of a place in southern Brazil.
Okay.
Buoyed up by 1,000 helium-filled balloons.
Southern Brazil is still a pretty massive place.
He was wearing...
1,000.
Doesn't seem like that much, does it?
I would say that's sufficient. How big are the balloons? Are they the weather balloons or are they regular balloons?
They're bigger than normal-sized balloons. I'm going to say 4 or 5 times bigger.
Okay.
So actually, visually, it looks like enough. He took some precautions in that he was wearing a helmet. He was wearing also an aluminum thermal flight suit. He was wearing some weatherproof layers. He actually had a parachute, clever boy. And he was attempting to break the 19-hour record of human flight by party balloons.
Okay. So specific. You got to get specific when you're trying to break records.
You do.
He was a man of God, so he had got on his side.
There's a podcasting record.
There is. We've looked this up before for like a never-ending live podcast.
Oh, good Lord.
We should do it.
I mean, podcasting. We've definitely got to be in the running if we've run all our shit together. However, big crowd gathered. Everybody loved this reverend. And he was very supported. And this was all in aid of raising a bunch of money to finance a spiritual rest stop for truckers in this Brazilian town.
Give us the town.
Which is the country's primary grain port. That I'm going to give it a whirl now. Paranuega.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right, let's give it a whirl. So 8 hours after takeoff, Antonio was reported missing after he lost contact with authorities. I believe that to mean they could no longer see him.
And his walkie-talkie stopped working.
That and also that, yes. So the fire brigade were called, and Johnny, a fire commander, told the national TV channel, given his physical condition and the equipment he was carrying,
things aren't looking good.
On the contrary. He said, I would say there's an 80% chance that he's still alive. So Johnny said the priest could be floating somewhere in the ocean, or he may have found refuge on a remote beach or in a coastal forest. He was carrying enough cereal bars. Pardon me. And water.
Primary school.
To sustain him for 5 days.
Is this going to turn into
so what is that? Like 15 falling cereal out of bars?
He just had pockets full of dust. Nutri bars.
For the love of God, I hope it wasn't those deliciously Ella ones. They are
crap.
Absolute joke.
So anyway, look, the fire chief has said, look, there's a very good chance because of the cereal bars and a couple of bottles of water that he could survive for 5 days. And he also had a GPS service. He had a satellite phone and he had a buoyant chair.
So he had a satellite phone.
Yeah.
So like, if he's not making any contact.
Well, like, time was a ticking by and the newspapers were beginning to become less and less optimistic. So here we have a reporter quoted as saying, what we're hearing now is that he did not know, in fact, how to use the equipment. He didn't know how to use the GPS and he couldn't work the satellite phone before he left.
Mother into space. Like.
Oh, exactly, no. Cass. What they've done there is send someone's granddad up into space without giving him any sort of... Do you know what? They probably had gone through the training with the GPS and the satellite phone, but it hit a wall and said, look, we've got a window of opportunity weatherwise here, Reverend. You'll be grand. So she said that when the Rev had...
YouTube tutorials.
So she said that while the Rev had intended to drift inland, weather conditions had forced him out over the deep blue ocean.
Oh, God. The stress.
And a little while later... authorities found his buoyant chair.
Empty.
Meanwhile, a flight instructor...
And that was just floating in the ocean, was it?
It was floating alone in the ocean. But they were like, look, it could have dislodged from his arse midway through the flight. He could still be somewhere else. There was a little bit of criticism for the flight. Like, they had engaged all the rescue services now at this point. And one of the pilots who had taken off, part of the search and rescue squad, said he called him undisciplined and an exhibitionist. He said the Reverend was always bragging about his faith and how fate was going to carry him and take him safely through his journey.
Jesus, that didn't age well, did it?
And that is sadly not what happened. So this was in fact this Reverend's second balloon journey, and he had been successful before on a 4-hour voyage from the Brazilian town of Ampere to Argentina, which had happened that same year, 2008, in January. Sadly, then, his...
Jen.
It's not funny, obviously. So sometime later...
I wish people could see the face Jen's doing right now.
She goes
inside herself slightly when she's trying not to laugh at the horrifying end of another human being.
It is the case. After several hours, the body of the Brazilian priest was found floating out over the ocean, somewhat suspended.
Oh, whoa.
By
creepy.
Kind of half deflated helium balloon.
Oh, creepy. God, that is so tragic. It's so tragic.
Look at Jen. Look at her. Look at her. She's doing her special face stretching thing when she's trying not to let the laugh out.
I'm not laughing. It is sad.
Try not to be glib.
It is sad. I'm reading, in some reports he's called a reverend. In others, he's called a father. I can't be sure about which religion he is. he's a man of God anyway. He was spotted by a tugboat at sea near the city of Mackay.
Does tugboat always make you think of, you know,
wanking?
Yeah.
So he's dead.
Okay. Is that the end of the story?
Yeah. That's the end of him. I don't even know if there's a lesson to be learned.
How did he die?
If he was slightly suspended still.
There is mixed reports now on whether his body was washed up. There's some reports saying the tugboat had found half deflated balloons. I have another report here saying it was 3 months later, in fact, that he was
found. Well, the balloons would not have been still inflated.
I don't know, Cass. I'd say there could have been some inflation still left after 3 months. It was a failed stunt. And some of his friends will remember him as a man of God. Others will say he's an exhibitionist whose fate in the end led him to his own death. And God is not real.
You raise me
up so I can stand on mountains. Okay, I also have another space story to give us.
Okay, great.
I don't have to give that to us immediately. We can let someone else.
So if you can speak. Well, I don't. I'm not. I just blew my load too much on the hive. So I'm going to.
You
going
sit
to
there.
Well, this. I'm in the same area as you in terms of aviation and ocean.
Oh, great.
Aviation.
Aviation.
Do you want it?
Always.
Do you want it? Like, give it to you.
Stick it in me.
Tugboat. Like, it's just. It's a boat for masturbating. It is. On. They're just chugging around on the old tugboat.
Rosie and Jim.
Tugging. Okay. So I'm going to tell you about the disappearance of Malaysian Flight 370.
Yes.
Fuck yes. I can't believe we've never done this before.
Remarkable.
I too can't
believe
it.
For time to pass.
Well.
Was that it? Do you think?
Was it?
Maybe so.
It may be so. Okay. So. Has enough time passed? I don't know. It's 10 years next March.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Wow.
I know, time is an illusion.
Life moves at pace.
It comes at you fast, as they say.
Really does.
On the internet. Okay, so Malaysian Flight 370 disappeared on the 8th of March 2014. I hope I haven't immediately given the wrong information there. Actually, I said 8th of March with a confidence that I now no longer feel. I'm pretty sure it was the 8th. And it took with it, when it disappeared, when it vanished, 239 passengers and crew. And it has never been seen again. And Malaysia, China and Australia mounted an enormous coordinated search for the plane that lasted 3 years, covered 120,000 square kilometers.
Wow.
That is an inconceivable number of meads.
We could never imagine.
The search cost 160 million. So I'm closing my eyes a lot because I'm trying to recall figures and I'm not very good at numbers.
100, that's still, how many people were on board?
To date, the most expensive search and rescue of all time. 239 people on board.
Wow. They have to have flown into a different dimension.
I mean, 100%, clearly. Clearly.
They went through some sort of time-space continuum and
disappeared.
Okay. So, I will say that they have found traces of the wreckage since then. So, the first piece of wreckage was found on an island called Reunion off the coast of Madagascar. And that piece, I'm pretty sure it was a flapperon. I now know what a flapperon is. Basically, 6 foot chunk of a plane. It was found to belong to Malaysian Flight 370. And that was found about 18 months after the disappearance. So that was the first thing of like a giant 777 Boeing jet. Like until then had disappeared without a single trace.
Where was this flight going to and from?
Okay, so I'll talk you through it. It started out as a completely standard red eye flight from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. So that meant that a vast majority of the passengers aboard the plane were Chinese. And headed home. There was also passengers from few from Malaysia where they were taken off. Indonesia, Australia, India, France, a couple of Americans, two Iranians, Ukraine, Canada, New Zealand and the Netherlands and Russia and Taiwan were also like represented among the among
the passengers
manifesto, the passenger manifesto. No Irish.
Whoa.
No Irish. No Brits. But the British did help. The search and rescue stuff was like a massive global coordinated thing. Like the US were involved, the Brits, loads of private citizens became completely consumed by this story. And like private citizens spent hours and hours and hours of time like examining satellite photos in minute detail, trying to like find some remnant of the crash in the months after. Aviation enthusiasts.
Where exactly did you say? So Kuala Lumpur, it took off from heading to
Beijing.
Beijing.
So as I said, it was a red eye flight. So it took off at 22:01 a.m. in the morning. So picture, put yourself on the flight.
Yeah.
Packed out.
Nighttime flight.
Over 200 passengers, crew everywhere. It took off about 6 minutes behind schedule, which, as we all know,
pretty good.
That's pretty unremarkable. All the tracking systems were working as it took off. It sent its first, half an hour after takeoff, one of the plane's communication systems sent what turned out to be its last transmission. And so this was an automated communication system.
No words.
And apparently it was totally standard. There was nothing unusual about the transmission. It showed that the plane was like on a normal route heading to Beijing. I want to say that they're flying over.
I have the map up here.
Yeah.
It's like bar the Gulf of Thailand. This is a flight over.
It's going
land,
over,
basically.
Yeah, yeah. They're heading to Vietnam at first.
Yeah.
That's kind of their direction.
How the fuck it ends up where, well, that piece of the plane ended up there.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll certainly tell you.
So okay, this is why it all presumably was so fucked up, because it disappeared out of the sky over land. No reports of crashed plane.
It didn't disappear out of the sky over land. It disappeared.
I'll
tell you. Sorry. just give me a sec here. So if you're looking at a map, and I recommend you do. If you see Malaysia there, yes, and kind of northeast is headed towards Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And they're heading towards Cambodian and Vietnamese airspace.
Yes.
And so basically all the different like portions of the world are different airspace jurisdictions. And what they do, so it took off and was in Malaysian airspace.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they do is they track these flights and they do handovers as they're crossing into new jurisdictions. And that basically means that at all times, every single plane that is in the sky all over the world is being tracked.
Okay.
And there is just never not a plane mm-hmm. being tracked. And if there is, it's like extremely out of the ordinary. Like
it's a UFO.
Presumably there's probably some kind of like special ops aircraft that, you know, who knows, but a commercial jet, everyone knows where it is at all times. That is completely essential. And so there is a communication system called ACARS, and it's an aircraft communications addressing and reporting system. And it's on board, it's a computer on board that collects information, tons of information about the aircraft and the pilot performance. And it's basically like in a car, the way the computer that like tracks oil levels and engine performance and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So it's kind of telling you what's going on in the workings of the plane at all times. And it measures like thousands of data points and sends the information back to the airline that owns the plane mm-hmm. via satellite. So kind of there's a bit of getting in the weeds here, because there's a lot of different ways that they eventually were able to plot out what happened to this plane after it disappeared off radar. At 20 past one, so now we're kind of 40 minutes into the flight,
mm-hmm.
there's a voice check-in. So the pilots on Malaysia flight 370 were a rookie and a long in the tooth
Gotcha.
Not long in the tooth. Senior, very senior. So we had Farik Ahmed, and he was 27 years old, and he was the kind of co-pilot, and this was his last flight, his last training flight before he was going to be fully certified to fly commercial planes. And then the pilot in command was Zahari Ahmed Shah, and he was 53. And apparently one of the most senior and respected pilots that Malaysia Airlines had. As I said, there was 10 flight attendants and 227 passengers. And so at the 20 past 1 a.m. mark, they were approaching the boundary of Malaysian airspace. And so Malaysian air traffic control radioed to pass the flight off to Ho Chi Minh. And when that happened, Zahari basically gave a verbal message of "all right, good night" to the Malaysian aviation officer.
Okay.
So I've seen two different things said about this "all right, good night" business. So one source that I was reading said the phrase "good night" is the radio parlance used by pilots when executing a handover from one airspace to another. And that is totally normal and apparently like a completely not unusual thing. But then I saw another piece saying that it was a strange phrase to use.
Okay.
For the pilot, and that, like, so people reading into this already, okay, I guess, is kind of what's going on.
What he didn't say was, "we've got a problem."
No, absolutely not. And as we said on the map, he's like heading over the kind of Gulf of Thailand.
Yes.
So he's heading across that stretch of water towards Ho Chi Minh City. And so the next thing after his voice check-in, the transponder on the plane just stops communicating. And that was like 2 minutes after he said, "all right, good night."
Is that something he would control or automatic?
It would be something that would be could be turned off.
Okay.
So, God, I said that very confidently. I think it is. So the transponder is important for the radar. So there's like two levels of radar. So the main level of radar that we would be thinking of, like thinking of a dot moving on a screen. Beep, beep, beep. And so the transponder is what impacts that. It sends electronic messages or squawks two radar systems, and that squawk contains information about what flight this is, what altitude, what speed it's traveling. So it's essential for air traffic controllers who are looking at all these little blips all over the world moving around, planes are identifying themselves. So the transponder is off, and that means that the plane is like flying blind from the ground's point of view. And if there is radar, the radar might see the blip of the actual moving object that is the plane, but they won't know who it is or where they're going because the plane isn't doing its transponder squawky thing. And so the turning off of the transponder is a simple flick of a switch in the cockpit. And the air traffic controller should notice immediately because it would cause a lot of fucking alarm if you've just been handed a plane over from another airspace jurisdiction.
And it's disappeared.
It disappeared from Thai military radar at 20 past one in the morning.
Did it cause alarm? Did it cause an alarm?
No, not yet. So as far as the Malaysians are concerned, they've passed the airplane across to the Taiwanese.
Great.
Yeah.
And then, so like about 6 minutes after the plane disappeared from radar, Thai radar does pick up an unknown aircraft that is flying now in a direction opposite to what Flight 370 had been traveling.
Towards where? Back towards Malaysia?
Yes.
Ooh.
It basically like takes a really, really sharp left and seems to almost double back on where it was going to.
Oh, weird.
And so,
would you presumably as a passenger on that plane
feel
yeah
absolutely. But now, I mean, also as a passenger on a plane, you're just like, well, they are on it, they know what they're doing.
Obviously
I don't know what they're doing. So yeah, so the Taiwanese, as far as I can gather, didn't pick up initially on the fact that they didn't have eyes on MH370.
Okay.
And so they're supposed to, within like 5 minutes of not having tracking on something, they're supposed to raise the alarm. But somehow about 20 minutes elapsed.
Okay.
And that was like
staff handover.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because in the aftermath and the investigation of this whole thing, you basically had a whole lot of different kind of like institutions and government bodies not wanting the fucking blame.
Didn't want to touch it.
Okay. So there is so after the Taiwanese didn't kind of raise the alarm about the plane not being visible in their airspace, because the plane had started to travel essentially nearly back the way it had come, it was slightly pointing north of where it had come, but anyway, Malaysian military and civilian radar began tracking the plane as it turned around,
because it returned into their airspace.
Yeah.
But they didn't know who it was.
No.
But was it identified as the plane, or was it an unidentified?
It was unidentified. But it, yeah, see, basically, they were still scrambling on the ground to even know that something was happening yet.
Yeah.
Do you know that kind of way? And so at 20 to 2 a.m., so like an hour into the whole flight, the you remember we were talking about the ACARS, the basically the, the kind of computer mind inside the plane that sends out a squawk with all the information on how it's getting on. It was supposed to transmit its little like half hourly squawk, and it doesn't happen. And so this is very significant, because basically to turn off the ACARS, it takes a lot of expertise. And if a flight were hijacked, cutting off the ACARS would be like probably the first move. Because
like a cloak of invisibility.
Exactly, because it stops the system reporting to satellites anything that's happening on the airplane, including like happening in terms of the actual control of the plane.
Would that would that be something a pilot could do?
Yeah, I'm sure 100%. So by then, even though, so it's like 2:15 in the morning now at this point, and they're now all starting to zero in on this fucking plane is not where it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Where the fuck is it? And so it had no longer on radar, but there is another type of radar, the military radar. So as we were saying, the Malaysian Air Force military radar tracked the plane as it was passing over this small island. That's just kind of I'm like left of Kuala Lumpur. It's north. Where is it? It's up here now. It's north of Malaysia, and kind of west.
Is it in the Gulf of Thailand?
No, it's the other side of that tongue of land. Sorry. Anyway, take my word for it. It's passing over an island of Pulu Perak in the Strait of Malacca, and at this point, it is hundreds of miles off its course. It's like back on the other side of the Malaysian Peninsula. So the other side of Thailand. It's fucking way off course. And so military radar were tracking it. And so people were now, the military were handing over all their raw radar data to US and British officials, because they just were scrambling to get answers, to try and find where these people were going to be. And so at, so yeah, this whole period of time from like 20 to 3 to till about 20 to 4, there's just this like complete blackout on information. They just have no idea where it's gone. And so they issued a code red at 20 to 4, which is like hours after like this whole thing has started to unfold. Like it's hours after the plane never crossed into Thai airspace. And so a code red, obviously, it declares a crisis, and immediate deployment of emergency response plans, but it took like an hour to issue the alert because it was still trying to confirm whether it was missing. So it was just like incredibly chaotic. And they're trying all kinds of things, sending messages to the plane, awaiting response, everything.
Because I guess, and beyond this being an incredibly bad event of hundreds of people potentially dead, they are now flying blind through the sky. If they're to believe this thing is still in the air, it's becoming a major flight risk for everyone else flying in the air.
Like, where
as
are
well.
They going to crash it?
Which is probably why you see all of these outside agencies cooperating, because they would have had flights in the sky as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so at 6:30 in the morning, the plane should have landed in Beijing. And at 7:30, there is a public announcement of the disappearance. So they announced it on Facebook. Very fucking weird.
Interesting.
Yeah. So for a second now, let's just go back to some details about this kind of plane. So they estimated that the plane had fuel enough for about 6 hours of flight before it would crash.
Okay.
And run out of fuel. So basically, like, by 7:30 when they made the announcement, they knew that whatever had happened, that plane was out of fuel by then. So whether it landed somewhere remote or it just fucking fell out of the sky at indescribable speeds,
it is out of the sky.
Out of fuel. Another thing that I learned while researching this that is fucking terrifying is that, okay, so they had a lot of theories about, like, had the cabin become depressurized and everyone aboard suffered hypoxia, and they were kind of like, would that account for, like, the plane going off course if literally everyone's unconscious and then dead on
pilots
the plane?
Slumped over the steering wheels.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the drop down oxygen mask. I will never be okay on a plane again. There's only like 10 to 15 minutes worth of oxygen in those.
What is the fucking point?
Truly.
It's like falling.
Do you know the
though?
Way they're always like, put it on yourself before your baby?
I'd
be fumbling for the 10 or 15 minutes just trying to get it on myself. I'd never get it on the child. God damn it. So apparently so the pilots apparently have a little bit more oxygen than that. Thanks. But basically it's the idea is if the cabin becomes depressurized, the pilot's like next plan of attack immediately is to descend to an altitude where the passengers will be able to breathe in a decompressed, depressurized marine cabin. But still, I do not like that.
It feels very rushed.
It feels very tight on time. I'm going to start bringing my own O2.
Did they decide because they were like
hysterical tantrum?
That's exactly
insecurity.
What you should do on a plane. That is exactly what will solve that issue.
It's like a weird question, but could they tell from where they knew the plane went that it felt intentionally steered in that direction? Is that what you're sort of suggesting?
Well, yes. So that was the thing. They were like, this is not a plane. They decided from tracking as far as they tracked, which was kind of north of the Malay Peninsula.
Yeah.
Mm. At that point, that's where they had gotten to on military radar. And they were like, this plane is it's flying like in a kind of reasonable fashion that suggests it's being controlled.
Okay.
You know,
maintaining altitude, keeping a course.
It actually even ascended to higher altitude at some point. They know that it ascended to higher altitude during that time, which was like unexplained. But
another question here. This is 2014. So we've people with phones. I don't know about signal, but
presumably there's Wi-Fi on the flight.
Do we have any communication from anyone on board?
No, never.
None. No. And never.
None that is ever.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever been reported in any of the investigations
and
that took place.
And this thing was all over the news, and we were seeing their families kind of camping out at the airport and holding vigils. Like, we would have heard about some communication. Last communication was that elderly pilot, or older pilot.
Yeah, in his 50s.
Saying goodnight.
Elderly.
Yeah, that's it. So, like I said, there was mass confusion on the ground. And basically, this began years-long living nightmare for the families who were waiting and grieving. And the, like, disappearance, like, instantly from that morning transfixed the entire world. And, like I said, there was immediately, like, civilian aviation enthusiasts, like, diving into the kind of search and speculation of what had happened. Aviation experts, engineers, data scientists, journalists, hobbyists, like large swathes of people, say in America, for example, started like communicating with each other, sharing theories and findings.
Yes, it's like the boys trapped in the cave, the football team. Yes. Everyone's got a theory, an idea.
Yeah.
Was there ever any one of those theories that suggested that this gigantic plane could have landed? Was there a shred of hope that somebody could have survived?
Yeah, no, they totally looked into that. So basically they established that there was about 600 runways in the world that could have accommodated the landing of a 777 Boeing.
Okay.
And like they, I mean, exhaustively searched
asked everyone there.
Any sign, lads?
Holding up a photo of a plane.
And could it have landed? It's so enormous. It would have needed a runway, but it's in terms of crash landing somewhere as well.
Still can't believe that they're white.
Who's white?
Planes.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Like, look.
High vis.
Neon yellow. Obvious. Yeah.
Like crash landing, or like, was there like an island above? They're over the sea. Last we checked, they're
okay. So last the Malaysian military radar had it. It was over southwest. So yeah, southwest over the Malay Peninsula.
Okay,
and then it kind of it curved back on itself basically, and they lost contact. At 20 past two in the morning, and by then it was over the Andaman Sea.
I see.
So
that.
Can you see the Andaman Sea? Yes. Is just kind of like to the left.
So it was over the sea again. Now there are islands there.
Yeah, there absolutely is.
And there's the
it's
Andaman
kind of
islands.
A large area though that's kind of like bordered by
land.
Like bits of land to the east, and then to the west is that one like kind of tongue of an island, the Andaman and Nicobar Islands. Mm. And so then this is where I just think it gets so creepy. So after the military radar lost sight on their instruments.
Why would that have happened?
They lost contact with
it. Yeah, that's right. Is this what you explained to us before, that this thing would require a bit of
turned off or
technical ability to turn it off, not just
and there is intentional anyway, unless it completely
combusted.
Yeah, and there is some theories that say that like the plane must have lost power at some point, and that like the kind of reboot of it or something. They know that it didn't like lose power and plummet to the ground right there.
Okay.
So it might have been that in the rebooting or something.
How did they know
it stopped communicating with the radar? I'll tell you how they know. So this is really freaky. So Remember, they're over the Andaman Sea.
Yeah.
And then at this point, there's like a satellite above the Indian Ocean, so like just down south of them, called Inmarsat. And it's like a satellite that, do you know, like when you have Wi-Fi on a plane and stuff like that,
yeah,
that's what you're communicating with, this satellite above.
Satellites are so funny.
They're fucking amazing. And so this company, Inmarsat, has like a, basically kind of like a web of satellites all over the world, basically. And so they started receiving hourly signals from flight 370.
What?
Yeah.
What type of what signals coming from this box?
So it's just an automated signal thing that they call like a handshake.
Okay.
So
like a ping from a telephone.
Yeah.
Like the pingy things.
So yeah, basically these orbiters high above the ocean detect the plane as the satellite basically just like automatically tries to make an electronic connection.
Okay.
And
Proof that it's there anyway.
Proof that it's there. And basically that the plane didn't complete the handshakes because its communication systems were disabled. And so the satellites were able to trace the plane flying below them, and they would have tried to make contact, the kind of electronic equivalent of being like, hey, hello.
But it could see that it was there.
They could see that it was there, and it pinged off this satellite every hour until 10 past 8. When the last handshake wasn't pinged, if you know what I mean.
So 10 past 8 and it was supposed, 2 hours, like an hour and 40 minutes after it was supposed to land.
Yes.
Still within its
And 7 hours no. after it had taken off. So it was out of fuel. Absolutely out of fuel at this point.
7 that it was going to be out of fuel.
Yeah.
So 10 past 8, that's the last.
It's gone.
That's the one that doesn't get a hit back.
And so basically through the satellite, like this very complicated, the whole thing, but basically they established scientists. That we're not scientists. You didn't come here for facts, did you? Because that's wrong. Reverse. Basically,
says
they tracked it down.
On the edge of their seats waiting for the comedy.
Yeah.
They tracked it down to basically the Indian Ocean.
Right.
And whoa. So as you can see from the map here, it is the furthest from fucking anywhere. You've got Australia over to the east, and you've got nothing. Look at this, guys. Nothing.
Wow.
South until you hit the Antarctic.
Wow.
So they went to the middle of nowhere.
Is that
nowhere.
The Antarctic or the Arctic? God, I'm fucking. You guys are the brunettes. Antarctic, I think.
Yes, you're right.
Will
Antarctic.
I read it off the map, Soph?
Zoom out.
Yeah. So it is probably the most remote place in the world, or certainly one of them.
That feels intentional.
It's but why? Very fucking intentional.
I mean, it's intentional if you know the plane's going to crash.
Yeah. So it feels at this point that one of the pilots has.
Yeah. So immediately there was kind of three theories going
on.
Wait,
I know you said that there like it's obvious, but
one of the pilots has intended to take everyone out with himself and overpowered the other pilot somehow.
Right.
The co-pilot.
No, I didn't
locked
get
himself
that.
In the cockpit
didn't get
and
it.
Took him and everyone aboard to heaven.
I didn't
so
see that.
It is okay, let's talk about the three theories for a minute before we dive totally into slandering a dead man.
We don't know that he's dead.
Exactly. One theory that immediately started getting cooked up was that it was hijacked.
Mm.
And they immediately started like investigating every single person that was on the passenger manifest, I think. And they found that there was two Iranian passengers traveling under false passports.
Weird.
Ooh, yeah. Well, is it that weird?
Well,
human trafficking is a huge issue.
Yeah. And
on the face on daily
exactly.
basis.
They were actually traveling to seek refuge. And
okay.
So they were found to be, not persons of interest. But they were very interested in the idea that, yes, the plane had been taken over because things like the transponder being disabled, all that kind of stuff, very fucking weird.
Mm.
And so they, they also had a passenger on the plane. So they were kind of like, who's on the plane that can do this? And obviously, like, Malaysian flights did not want anyone to be like, well, your pilots would have been capable of doing this.
Of course.
So they found that there was one passenger who worked as a flight engineer for a Swiss jet charter company. And that poor passenger was briefly under suspicion as a potential hijacker because he was thought that he would have the relevant skills.
But what?
Intent. Oh, like, relevant skills to do things like...
To do that, but no reason. Turn
on transponders and then potentially fly a plane completely blind for 7 hours. And like, that's the thing. Like, at that stage, they still had no debris anywhere. Mm. And a huge plane going down would have caused like an oil... slick, presumably, possibly fires on the surface of the ocean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, because as well, in a way, like if you think about it, they were still, the satellite information from Inmarsat, whatever that one's called, it wasn't coming through until kind of the next day.
Oh.
Like those guys were looking at the actual real-time news cycle and being like, oh my God, maybe our satellites picked up on something. And then they started gathering their data. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so that's not like part
of it. So it wasn't happening. They weren't watching in real time the plane traveling. So they had this like insane search area where they were like, this plane could have crashed down anywhere. The crash down site would be highly visible for a certain amount of time, but then maybe not.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Stormy sea could have eaten it all up.
And the vastness of the area they were searching is just like... inconceivable. And so
release the drones.
Well, there was one company that in the years since, when they were looking for bits of the plane, there was like a private US company that was like undertook to find it, and like basically off their own backs, they were Texas, I think, loads of money behind them, and they had these underwater drones. Yeah. And I think they had some kind of deal where they were like, we get paid if we find the plane.
Yeah.
And they didn't. But you know what? In the search of the Indian Ocean that took place after all this, like where they were searching for literally 3 years, in that time, they basically charted a whole swathe of the earth that had been uncharted until then.
Yeah.
Uncharted.
Yeah.
And they found wreckages from like the 1800s, shipwrecks and stuff. Wow. They found an underwater volcano.
That they just didn't know existed.
That just didn't fucking know was there. That's and they used underwater drones that look like torpedoes. Crazy.
But were unable to find this.
Yeah,
life.
Yeah. They were combing the seabeds, like looking for this thing. And so then, so the hijack theory is one theory. There was another theory spooking around that the hijackers possibly took the plane to a remote island. No terrorist organization ever claimed responsibility. And obviously, as we said earlier, they identified the 600 possible runways. No confirmation that they ever like saw the flight landing on their runways. And then like the whole hijacking theory did kind of like get discredited when they did start to find the first fragments in July of the following year. And so there was another theory put forward by an American aviation journalist, Jeff Wise, who said that Russian operatives could have stolen the plane via the plane's electronic bay, which you could access by a hatch in the first class cabin, and that they may have done this to distract from the Crimean War. Now, this theory completely doesn't work.
Okay.
When you look at the satellite data that in Inmarsat, that company, I can't remember.
Well,
the
they were going
of.
The opposite to Russia.
Yeah, completely opposite. And then they thought it was, Rupert Murdoch got in on the action, of course. The week following the disappearance, he took to Twitter and basically tweeted that this confirms jihadists turning to make trouble for China. Then he suggested that the flight might have been hidden in northern Pakistan, like bin Laden, he says. So obviously these conspiracy theories are enormously helpful. And there was other Russian newspaper endorsed another theory that claimed unknown terrorists had hijacked the plane, flown it to Afghanistan, and then held the crew and passengers hostage. Though part of holding people hostage is telling somebody else that you have the people to then try and get your demands met. So all of those theories just don't ring true for me. Then there is a theory that a journalist for Le Monde speculated that the plane had been shot down by US military because they wanted to prevent mysterious cargo from reaching China.
And what could have been on board?
Now, they posited that it had been shot down over the South China Sea. And this, again, doesn't track with the satellite data. But this journalist was like, this goes right to the top. This is governments colluding, and this whole disappearance is fabricated as part of an elaborate cover-up. And so both of those theories just don't work with regards to the satellite information and then also where debris first started washing up. But like all these theories, like one of the survivors of a family lost in the disappearance, so this man, Ghislaine Waitrelos, that's the worst, Ghislaine Waitrelos, I feel terrible because he's obviously a person who's tormented forever about this. He lost his wife and 17-year-old son and 13-year-old daughter, and he has a legal case ongoing in France still investigating the missing flight. And he believed that, he believes in the intercept theory, that the US government shot the plane down.
But sure, they'd have to change the whole plane's direction before they shot it down.
Yeah, I mean, unless they just decided that, okay, maybe it was shot down in the Indian Ocean.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but it's definitely...
It still would require, like, if we still are to believe, does that theory suggest that we are to not believe the satellite pinging the location?
Yeah.
Who were the company who owned...
They'd be like, it goes right to the top. The Brits own the satellite company. They're in on it. Yeah.
The Brits own it.
Well, they're UK based. I don't know who all owns it, but...
Interesting.
UK based. And so... Really and truly, it just feels like somebody took control of that plane and
decided.
Yes, the most obvious.
Well, Occam's razor. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Now, so the pilot. Zahari.
Is this the trainee pilot or the 53-year-old?
This is the 53-year-old. So the most widely accepted narrative. So basically the investigation, when it wrapped up, 3 years after the disappearance, mm-hmm. declared that they did not know what happened.
Okay.
Which was crazy. They just literally were like, we don't know.
But they couldn't prove one way or the other.
They couldn't.
Doubt, yeah.
The Malaysians did not want their pilot to be the perpetrator.
Of course.
Which obviously is not
obviously fair.
Looking likely.
And basically, it's still the most widely accepted narrative. And he was in command of the plane. He had a long career behind him, the expertise to execute such a maneuver. And so
how was his mental health?
Married. What?
Yeah.
Motive.
Say that again?
What's his motive?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So basically, like, Zahari was married. He had three grown up kids. He lived in apparently a very nice gated community. He owned two houses. He was known for being just very kind of fair-minded, like upstanding guy, not overbearing to the people in his command and things like that. He had in his house and this really elaborate Microsoft flight simulator, and he flew that frequently and often posted to online forums about his hobby.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pilot. That tracks.
Now, troubling... his home flight simulator was found to have mapped a similar strange path.
Oh no.
As the one indicated by radar and satellite.
Oh, come on, that's not a coincidence.
Also, pretty damning, the Malaysian authorities lied about this until a confidential report was leaked by New York Magazine in 2016. So...
Why were they so intent on protecting him? Just because he was Malaysian.
It's an international story, I guess. I know. They don't want to
bad press for the country.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of like...
And Malaysian Airlines was like partly government owned. They did have public shareholders, but the majority of shares belonged to the government. I think the Malaysian government was... I don't want to say shady, but they were going through some shit. They also, Malaysian... Airlines lost another plane a few months later in 2014. It went down.
Oh, I see.
Crashed. So it was a bad year for them.
So this pilot had simulated this path or
this journey
around about it, seemingly ending the same spot as in the middle of nowhere.
I don't know exactly his simulated path, but they said that it resembled the path the plane took.
And did the path have any, like, according to his wife, did the area have any, did he have any interest in the abyss in the middle of nowhere? Yeah, like, did, no, was there, I mean, any signs?
The only family member of his that I could like read on the record was a daughter who was like, this is not who my father was.
Yeah.
Which is fucking tragic. So the guesswork is kind of all we have to go on. And basically that they finally kind of have said is that they believe whoever was flying the plane probably depressurized the cabin early on and killed, so that would have killed everyone aboard hours before the plane like spiral dived into the sea.
But not his, anyone, not his co-pilot who was also there in the cabin.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, maybe he deprived the co-pilot of oxygen
or drugged him.
I mean, they say that with the data they have, they can tell that the aircraft, like, if it was being controlled at the very end, it wasn't very successfully being controlled, which could be
suggestive of losing
pilot with hypoxia.
Yes,
it could be that the pilot or somebody put the plane on autopilot, depressurized the cabin, killing themselves and everyone, and that the plane just flew and flew and flew until it just nosedived at unbelievable speeds into the ocean.
Unbelievable. And like, presumably
just absolutely pulverized on impact.
Jesus.
Now, the thing is that up until the time that they found the first debris, they didn't have, even with the satellite information, they still like had narrowed it down to still quite a big field. And they had basically put together these two possible search areas that were like these two arcs. One that was like north of the Indian Ocean, one that was like further south.
Okay.
And like, I mean, it's extremely complicated. I've been attempting to take it on board, but like basically one reason or another, they were like, it's in either of these, but they're still giant.
Okay.
And so then when the first bit of debris floated up on Reunion Island in 2015, that kind of confirmed that it was the South Arc that, and Reunion Island is off Madagascar. So like we're bang in between Australia and Madagascar, somewhere there.
Okay.
Right there, seemingly. And, but like, it's mad because they still don't fully know the trajectory. They know more like the time that they had 6 hours of just straight flying somewhere down here. Do you know that kind of way? But it's still so vast. And so but this is
not your
really
dad's city triangle. You like distance, speed.
Dad's city, distance, speed, and whatever you get the,
what's the T, time,
terminal
velocity.
Yes. Yeah. Sciencey. And so listen to this, right, this is really interesting. What they're doing at the moment is still, they're still trying to fucking figure out,
what are they trying to
exactly
figure out,
exactly what happened, where, like the actual path,
okay,
and where the plane went down.
Why is that so interesting versus, well,
I suppose they're
why
still trying to recover something for the surviving families, like, okay, some answers and stuff. And the thing is that, like, with planes that have gone down in the ocean, like, there has been, like, there was a French plane that went down in, I want to say about 2009. Can't remember fully the details, but I remember that the plane was found on the ocean floor, all the passengers still inside.
You're kidding.
No.
Belted into their seats.
Holy fuck.
And totally preserved. Because of the depth so that they were at.
Wow.
And they started an operation to raise the wreckage and like get the bodies back for the families. Raise me up, exactly. And so the change in the water's temperature as it was rising was causing
everything,
almost like instantaneous decomp on the bodies. So they left it. It's still there. It's at the bottom of the ocean.
Jesus, don't fuck with the sea.
Don't.
Just oh no, for sure not.
I mean, the fact that they found that plane is insane.
So in a way, there that's was like, mad. They were like, look, if we get the, if we find the trajectory, we could potentially find this plane.
Would it give a theory, I suppose, as to what had happened?
Exactly, yeah.
Whether and it was, I suppose, intentional, you see, or is it just like a straight thing through different.
And the thing is, been, like,
if it felt like if it was being steered in one particular direction, was he aiming to go? Was there
that's
any
the thing,
possible way he was
forward,
trying to? Yes.
It's just
to
nowhere.
Spinning.
And it's been impacted by the winds and all that kind of stuff. That suggests that everyone was passed out, including the pilot.
Exactly. Or it's an intentional, some mad technical fucking fuck up in which the steering completely, they lose all control of it. They're scrambling to get it back.
I mean, I don't,
it doesn't look that way,
that anything except human power could have made that left turn it was heading over to Thailand.
Did you ever sneeze while driving?
Well, you know what I'm saying.
But you're right. You're right. That's a reason there's a co-pilot.
And my dad used to do wonky arms. You know, when they're driving along, they go, woo.
Yeah.
In the car. I don't know why my dad thought that was okay to do, actually.
I like a bit of wonky arm action.
So also, if you think about it, the Zahari surviving family, like...
absolutely gobsmacked.
Forevermore are trying to clear their father's name.
Yeah.
You know? What's the explainer from them to the...
Flight simulator.
Well, the flight simulator was leaked from the Malaysian investigation.
Do they deny that?
The daughter, like I said, the only quote I could find was the daughter being like, this is not who my father was.
In a way, and pinning it on the pilot from the actual plane's perspective makes sense. I mean, it wasn't a technical fault. You're safe to travel.
Aren't going
to
be like,
there's a fault with the plane.
It's the plane.
So it feels strange that they would sort of go to such great lengths.
Always goes to human error. Or like human judgment rather than...
That's how AI is going to control everything. That attitude.
That's that attitude. So I have to tell you about the barnacles real quick.
Yeah. On the bit that they found by the island.
Yeah. So basically, they have seen barnacles growing on different bits, particularly this bit flapperon. And so, you know, when I was saying they washed up close to Madagascar.
Yeah.
And so they have these barnacles on them called the... begins with L. The Hitchhikers of the Sea, Lepas. So they're called the Hitchhikers of the Sea. And the Lepas barnacle, they actually look space age. Check them out. Cement themselves at the base of their stalk.
Oh, yes.
And then they secrete one of nature's most powerful adhesives.
Wow.
And then they use calcium carbonate and other minerals from that they glean out of the surrounding seawater to build their shells layer by layer by layer as they grow. And the
so we have a sense of time and age.
And depending on the kind of chemical markers in all the different layers of shells,
they can tell
things like temperature, oxygen ratios, conditions in the water at the exact time that layer of shell was grown.
Isn't nature beautiful?
And so is it tracking? Like,
basically they say, imagine the shell like a thick book and the animal has added one page after another as it grows. So basically each individual page, each thin calcite layer gives scientists a diary of the seawater through which the barnacle and therefore the piece of debris has journeyed as it built its shell. Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible.
Yeah. So like they are still working on the research into that. And do you know, Lepas expert Anne-Marie Power at the University of Galway, Ireland.
Yes!
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
No one on board, but we're in the end for the recovery.
She has signed up to raise live... thingies, these little barnacles, in an aquaria to establish shell chemistry for all different temperatures.
Deadly.
And so as she is gathering this data, it will eventually help the team to create a kind of an equation that
will lead them to the wreckage site.
I love scientists.
Isn't that crazy?
Definitely.
I'm going to look her up on Instagram.
So I said earlier it was 160 million searches. Actually 200 million spent on the search at this point. In time.
I mean, good.
And loads of that money was stumped up by Australia.
What?
Just being real nice. Just being like, oh, it's kind of near us. We'll help.
But they're also there's a load of benefits there. They have new maps of the area.
Well, that's
new
true.
Wreckages.
That's
new
true.
Learnings.
Yeah.
Potential volcanoes to claim as your own.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's very true. Now,
someone must know Anne-Marie Power, and I really want her to come on and explain that.
If anyone knows, get in touch.
The barnacle babe of the West.
Do you ever want to get on a plane again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Even now that you know about suicide,
here she is.
Murder, suicide by pilot?
Oh my God, she's a turbo ride.
Oh, cool.
Senior lecturer, Department of Zoology. She's there, lads. She's in NUI Galway.
If Give you're...
Hang on a sec. There she is. Oh no, she's false alarm. They're both rides, but there's very many Anne-Marie parents.
I can't say that.
Don't they all have lovely bottoms? Let's stick with that. Oh my God, she's got a Twitter account at Barnacle Hunt.
Ooh.
And her Twitter handle is the Lapis Barnacle as her image. Follow. So interesting.
I'm going to get an influx of followers now. That is fascinating. Do you want to get on a plane again? Yeah, I do. I mean, these things are always the exception, aren't they? Not the rule.
See, I started researching this the night before I was getting a transatlantic flight to Boston.
Mm.
And I can say that was a bad call. Even though I realized halfway through the story research that I shouldn't be doing that, I stopped the next morning getting on the plane. I still had a hysterical panic that I was going to obviously go down with the plane. And so I recorded three separate goodbye messages, one for each of my children. And then in Dublin
Which
Airport.
Which one did you give more of to?
Oh,
more
I was time. Very careful to say practically the same thing to okay, each of them so they couldn't compare and contrast and never identify who my favorite is. Though obviously I have one. And I was in Dublin Airport and like the files were so big, I couldn't fucking send them. I was trying to download WeTransfer to my, it was a panic. It was a panic. And then I ended up uploading them to YouTube under unlisted
okay, well, so if we're just going to delete them now.
No, no, because now I'm like, actually, that's just real handy.
Yeah, that's there now, done.
So I have unlisted YouTube videos that I'm just ready to crack out anytime I die.
You'll have to give us your password because we'll need to share them, or send us the links in an email because
I'm my absolute pleasure. My absolute pleasure, Cass.
I'm just
I would
so
do that
thrilled.
For you.
I won't listen to them. I'll just keep them safe there in my inbox.
I think we have a chance of getting Dr. Anne-Marie Power. I'll email her now.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? And she can come on and refute all of the facts, quote unquote facts, that I thought I was gathering and relating properly.
Is there any chance those barnacles, the Lapis ones, are also called goose barnacles?
No idea. Again, not the person to ask.
Absolutely terrifying, this whole murder suicide by pilot subgenre of terrifyingness.
Oh yes, I bet I would imagine
like,
so.
Some this is going power. To happen one bad to day. One of us, definitely.
Do you think?
Like, here's
I think
one.
We all go out in very normal ways.
Listen to this: North Atlantic Ocean, in 1999. This could have happened to any of us.
What happened to him?
Well, not you. You're too young. A plane flying from New York to Egypt. They had a flight crew, captain, co-pilot, another co-pilot. The plane was crossing the ocean when the co-pilot left the cockpit, followed later by the captain. So then the last co-pilot was left alone in the cockpit, disengaged the autopilot, and nose down inputs were recorded on the flight deck recorder, and then the plane just rapidly descended after its engines were shut down, and the captain returned to the cockpit and tried to take back control of the plane, repeatedly asking the co-pilot for help, but he continued to command the elevator to pitch nose down. The airplane eventually collided with the surface of the ocean,
annihilating everyone on board. That's why you shouldn't play Monopoly.
Like 270 what? People died.
I know, I'd say there was a row there in the cockpit.
Oh, a Monopoly row.
And it's all toys out of the pram then.
It can get very
men
heated.
Emotional.
Men are too
they're
emotional.
Too emotional for
yes, you're right.
Positions.
They can't be working together like
you're
that.
So right.
They're just so they're trigger hormones. Happy and hormonal.
Yeah.
And that's the learning we have for. Thank you, Sophie. I'm absolutely bet into this now.
I hope that I've done it justice because it's such a massive
I believe,
fucking story.
I believe you have. Thank you. And
thank you,
dear
you,
listener.
Dear listener.
Come over and check us out in the Patreon.
Do
it's
it.
Another juicy
We're
episode.
Fucking bopping over there. Patreon. Cassie just did a massive catfish mortar. Absolutely.
That story was incredible.
Whirlwind of a story. Worth your little bucks a month, but we've greatly appreciated it. Check us out on patreon.com/thecreepdive. Love to you and your family.
Bye.
Ooh, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.